What's up, Atlanta? It's a Tuesday with Turtle. Got you four, the full four, with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Got producer G alongside tonight, Big O with a night off, so Garrett Chapman will be along the way. We'll have a producer six-pack, some true and false questions on the Falcons, and we'll get Garrett's input on some college topics as well, as I would like to pick his brain as part of our foursome of college football game time. Big games for both Tech and Georgia coming up this weekend, so we'll get into all of that. Hawks with a huge win last night. The Veet Krejci game, how about that? 28 from Veet. He was on fire, unconscious off the bench last night as the Hawks topple the Clippers 105-102. Harden went off. He had 35 and a triple-double. Not good enough. The Trae Young-less Hawks beat the Kawhi Leonard-less Clippers, and they do damage in Tinseltown, taking down the Lakers and the Clippers over the last few days. And then tomorrow, they get a nice little treat at Sacramento, who are 3-7, and all of a sudden have the oldest roster in the NBA. When did that happen? It was De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis and everybody else out there. Not so much anymore. Now they got guys, I mean, that are 34, 35 years old starting. You got a hobbled Zach LaVine. You got DeMar DeRozan out there. Sabonis is still there, but he's basically all they got. So the Hawks may be able to put together a nice little winning streak here on the West Coast. So we'll be keeping our eyes on that. That'll come your way tomorrow on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, with coverage starting at 9:30 and tip off at 10 o'clock. Also, some pretty interesting news coming down today. The Braves make a little switcheroo in their coaching hires, and their 2026 coaching staff has been revealed. We all know the manager, Walt Weiss. Bench coach is now going to be Tony Mancelino. Again, as I said, there was a little switcheroo. Originally, he was hired to be a position coach, but I fielded a couple of calls today. I put out the word, the bat signal. I was like, hey, is this weird? Is this something that we should be concerned about? Is this something that, you know, is a little eye-popping? Because it just looked weird to me. And I was told, no. Just they were able to add some other people late in the game. Tommy Watkins specifically, who's taken over as the third base coach, that allowed them to have more flexibility with their coaching staff. So, okay, cool. But I just saw that, and I was like, wait a second. Wasn't he hired to do something else? But anyway, again, Walt Weiss, manager, bench coach Tony Mancelino, pitching coach Jeremy Hefner. I'm excited about that one. I think he's going to be really good for this young staff. Bullpen coach J.P. Martinez. Tim Hires is back as the hitting coach. First base Anton Richardson, also excited about that. Third base coach Tommy Watkins. And, yes, Eddie Perez is back as a major league coach. So that is the roster that was put out today, and we shall see how it goes. I'm excited for the Braves in 2026. They certainly have a lot of moves to make in the offseason. And then, of course, we get to the Atlanta Falcons, because you know that's where we got to start, and that's where we got to finish. Last night, again, can't thank everybody enough. We took phone calls for essentially the entire show. And if y'all were still that passionate on Tuesday as you were on Monday, you know I'm here for it. Got a couple of guests sprinkled in, but for the most part, it's just me and you on the phones at 404-726-0929. And here's where I'd like to start today. Michael Penix Jr. has obviously been the talking point since the game on Sunday. But now we start to drill down, right? Now we start to examine why what happened. We start to examine who caused what happened to happen, and we start to look ahead to how do we fix this? Why, what, and how? Why, what, and how? And today, let's focus on the how part of it. Yesterday, we talked about the why, right? Yesterday was the why. Yesterday, I asked the question point blank, right here on 92.9 The Game, put up a poll that got a ton of action. Is Michael Penix Jr. the number one problem for the Atlanta Falcons? And we talked it out. It started bubbling on Sunday. It boiled over yesterday here on 92.9 The Game. And everywhere on TV and in the media and podcasts. It was the number one discussion going on in town. And it'll remain so. But we got to move on, right? We got to start looking towards the future. We got to start looking towards how, again, the how today. Yesterday was the why. Today is the how. How do the Falcons move on? How do the Falcons respond? How do the Falcons, at 3-6 with 8 games left, salvage whatever is left of this season? Is it possible that this team goes on a run, on a toot, if you will, and finds its way back into a playoff picture? Sure. They have enough bad teams left on their schedule that that is possible. But that's not the how I'm talking about today. Because I don't think we've discussed enough about the how for Michael Penix Jr. How does Michael Penix Jr. get back on track? Well, I think you guys know what I'm about to say. It's coaching. Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris, this is not an exaggeration, folks. This is the most important week of their tenure as Atlanta Falcons coaches. If Michael Penix Jr. does not show marked improvement this weekend against Carolina, who we know what they did last time to Penix, I think they're in serious, serious trouble. And I'm talking now. I'm not talking about the end of the season. If Michael Penix Jr. does not show significant gains from what he did last week, I think this Atlanta Falcons coaching staff, particularly on offense, is in serious, serious trouble. So again, the conversation continues to be about QB1. But now we're being progressive about it, right? It's not just wallowing in what happened on Sunday. Because you have 8 games left, guys. This is not the end of the season. You have 8 games left. And Michael Penix Jr. needs to show immediate, significant improvement. How? Coaching. It's not him. It's not him putting in extra hours at practice. It's not him, you know, beating himself up in the post-game interviews. It's not the offensive line playing better. It's not Bijan Robinson playing better. It's not the defense playing better. It's coaching. And I stand on that. Zach Robinson is coaching for his job this week, in my opinion. In my opinion, in Turtle's humble opinion, Zach Robinson is coaching for his job this week. I think if Michael Penix Jr. does not show significant improvement, there is a real shot that he will not have his services retained. I know Raheem Morris said they're not making any coaching changes right now. If Michael Penix Jr. has another showing that's close to 12 for 28 and the significant misses he made in that game, I don't know, man. I don't know. TJ Yates, what can you do, pal? Ken Zampezi, what can you do, pal? Dwayne Ledford, what can you do, pal? Everybody's elevated. Everybody on that offensive staff. Because the one thing this team cannot afford now at 3-6 is to let the belief start to creep in that Penix might not be the guy. That is the one thing this franchise cannot afford to do. So if I'm Michael Penix, I'm looking at Zach, and I'm looking at Ra, and I'm looking at TJ, and I'm saying one word. And I heard Mike Bell say it a lot today, and he's 100% right. It's a 4-letter word. No, not that one. It's H-E-L-P. Help. Help me. Help me see the defense better. Help me with my step drops. Help me with my mechanics. Help me with my footwork. Help, help, help. I need help. I'm drowning here. Can he do it? Can Zach Robinson do it? That's my question to you. 404-726-0929. There's 8 games left in the season. Do you believe by the time the end of the season comes, playoffs or not, that we will see a markedly improved version of Michael Penix Jr.? The tape's all there, folks. The tape is all out there now. So Zach and Raheem and TJ and Dwayne and everybody else in those meeting rooms need to sit down and they need to make their main goal helping this quarterback who who right now is broken. Right now, he's broken. 404-726-0929. I see the calls already starting to light up. So next segment, we will get right to you. 404-726-0929. Can this Falcons coaching staff, now that all the tape is available, I know they're hearing the noise from the media and everybody else, and I know that they feel it inside that building. They need to fix Michael Penix Jr. now. Do you believe they can do it? They got 8 games to do it. I believe that now becomes the number one priority, unless somehow you find yourself getting back into a playoff race, which at 3-6, I don't know. And you're 0-2 in the division. I personally don't see how it's possible. But again, I'm not going to say never because crazier things have happened. 3-6 teams have made the playoffs. Not many, but a couple. But other than that, it's all about number 9. Can they do it? We'll take your calls. 404-726-0929. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Back with you here on 92.9 The Game. Before we get to the busy, busy phones, just want to remind you to join the morning shift every Friday for the tailgate at home. It's presented by Publix. Bo Morgan will fire up the grill and share his favorite game day recipes. And you can share your best work on the grill by tweeting at The Morning Shift. That's the tailgate at home presented by Publix. Feed your fandom. Feel the hype this year with Publix every Friday morning on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 10 o'clock on Chris Thomas Tonight. You got 8 games, guys. Can they do it? Can the coaching staff? Listen, and here's why I'm phrasing it this way. Imagine whatever it is that you do for work. Imagine knowing that you had one task to do to save your job. And if you can't do it, you're going to lose your job. Whether it's you're an accountant, you get the big Kaminsky file like from Seinfeld. You got to complete it. You got to ace it. Otherwise, you're fired. That's essentially what Zach Robinson and the offensive staff are looking at right now. So can desperation save their jobs? Let's start with Nate in North Carolina. Nate, you're in the game.
Hey, what's going on, Turtle?
What up, man?
Ain't much. Hey, first, man, I want to say first-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
But I think that if they had been – that they've really been in this situation for the last couple of weeks, man. So I don't see what they can do now to change all of that. It just is, and I think it's in a situation where they don't know what to do. You can see it when the blitzes come from one side. Everybody knows that plays football. The open man is where the blitz comes from. Too often, Penix is looking the other way. The blitz is hitting him in the backside. It's just, I think we made the wrong decision for head coach. Bottom line, I really do.
Well, Nate, and thanks for checking in. If that's the case, then they will no longer retain their services with the Atlanta Falcons. That's my default on this one. If they can't do it, they will not have a job. Guys, it's that simple. If these guys cannot get Penix back in order, they will not have a job. Because that is now mission statement number one with a bullet. With a bullet, you have to get 9 back on track. How do you do it? Coaching. You have to coach him up. You have to be able to overcome what these defenses are doing to him. You have to be able to scheme receivers open. You have to be able to get the running game back to being consistent. You have to. And if you can't do it, it's going to cost you your job. So can desperation win out and save the day? John in Adairsville is up next. John, go ahead.
Hey, so, man, it's been painfully hilarious over the past 24 hours to listen to all the Falcons fans. Man, it's horrible. But I can say this. I remember where I was sitting when Arthur Blank bought the Falcons. And I remember looking at my friend and saying, he did not buy them to not have a champion. He did not buy them to be the losers that they had been. And listen, it's hard for me to sit on the sidelines and watch Arthur, because I knew Arthur when he was with Home Depot. And it's hard for me to sit there because that guy has got so much passion. And somebody has sold him a raw bill of goods here. Rich McKay's probably got a huge part of in all this. But here's the deal. I know this. I know that Arthur, as a store manager, Arthur would never put up with this. I know as a head coach, Arthur is it's killing him, and he will do something. I cannot see him continuing to turn a blind eye to Raheem at this particular point. It's hard to watch Raheem because he's a really nice guy. But at this point, listen, I've watched a lot of nice people not make it. And it's not nice guys. It's not nice guys finish last.
I get it, and I appreciate the phone call. Listen, John, that's exactly why we're having this conversation. It's funny. That's the exact pinpoint reason. Because if you can't do it, a job you will not have. That's the bottom line. You're right. Arthur Blank, in my opinion, cannot sit there at Flowery Branch and at his home estate and watch this team continue to fumble around. He can't. And that's why I truly believe if this team cannot get Michael Penix Jr. in order, there will be major, major changes. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's sooner rather than later. Sooner rather than later. Again, I said this last week and I stand by it. You can't fire Raheem in season. Not because he doesn't deserve it. He's 20 games under 500 as a head coach, by the way. Not because he doesn't deserve it, but because there's literally nobody to take the job. So it would have to be another coach. Scott's in Atlanta. Scott.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, Scotty?
Hey, so I think we're asking the wrong question. If we're going to depend on Michael Penix to chuck it all over the field, and I understand making better decisions and making better throws, I get that. But this offense is not built to put the ball in his hands and just chuck it all over the field. If we're going to set up the pass and help Michael Penix, we have got to set up the run. Now, I went back and looked at some stats, and these might be eye-opening to you and other fans, but Bijan is on pace for 50 less carries than he had last year. He had 304 total carries last year. He's on pace for 255. He also had 16 rushing touchdowns last year. He only has 2 this year. On top of that, Tyler Allgeier, he's on pace for record low carries, record low yardage. This is a problem. We're built to run the ball. So if we want to help Michael Penix, Bijan Robinson for the season is averaging 5 yards a carry. Tyler Allgeier is averaging 3.6 yards a carry. That's what the numbers say. If we want to help him, we need to run the ball to set up the pass. That's almost 9 yards between the two of them. Second and one sounds a lot better than third and 10 or third and 9, doesn't it? So that's that. But also, I also looked at the stats of Jonathan Taylor and Christian McCaffrey. They're touching the ball a significantly amount more than Bijan and Tyler are. So if we have the best 1-2 punch in football at running back, if we truly do, let's run them. Let's work the clock. And when Penix does throw the ball, stop throwing to David Seals or these, you know, anyone else besides Drake London. If we run the ball with Bijan and Tyler, and then we do throw, why not do something like what Indianapolis did where they do a tight end screen with Tyler Warren, but we do it with Kyle Pitts?
No, Scotty.
Why not have Tyler Allgeier and Bijan do little valve routes where we throw it to him and have them both on the field and throw to him in emergency?
No,
that would make
Scott,
Michael
listen, man, that's
job
that's,
easier.
That's definitely, and I appreciate you checking in as always, that's definitely part of the solution. Be more creative, as you're saying. Use different combinations. Use Bijan and Tyler on the field together at the same time. That's all part of how this thing works. But I will say one thing to your stats. You got to keep this in mind, Scott. And who is this on? Coaching. The Falcons got blown out in 2 games, essentially taking the run game away. So you wonder why those carries are down? You lost 34-10 to Miami, and you lost 30-0 to Carolina. You can't run the ball in those situations. So that's going to two out of the 9 games that you played, essentially your running game was effective, rendered ineffective. And in the other games, again, to me, that's on coaching. Scott, appreciate you checking in as always. Augie's in the car. Augie, go ahead.
Hey, so I'm kind of mad at Scott because he took a lot of my points I was going to say. But, I mean, I agree with him. When Tyler Allgeier has 15 carries, the Falcons are 10-3. They have lost three times.
Including three, and you want to know what's crazy about that stat too? You want to know what they are this year when he does that? 3-0.
I know. I mean, I'm sure a part of that is just game script. They hand it off to him at the end of the game. But you got to think there's something to that. Michael Penix Jr. cannot overthrow a handoff to Bijan Robinson. He can't overthrow that. So when the run game is going, which part of that is game script, it makes Michael Penix's life so much easier. Drake London, medium range target. All the guys are moving on the box. That leaves this nice, juicy zone for Drake London to get active in. It's a real easy throw for Penix to make. It just, if they would just hand the ball off to Tyler Allgeier and Bijan Robinson behind, not as good in recent years as it has been in recent years, but still a solid offensive line, if they just hand it off, not only will Michael Penix have less opportunity to mess up, that will look good on the coaching staff, and they can save their jobs.
No, Augie, it's all good points, man, and I appreciate you checking in. Drive safe. It's just a matter of if you can do that, right? And you mentioned game script, and that's really what it comes down to. The game flow is another term, another football cliche, but it's true. They're cliches for a reason. Like I just said, in the Miami game and in the Carolina game, you couldn't run the ball. You were down too much. You had to throw yourself back into the game. And again, that's two out of the nine games you've played this season. 49ers game, they shut down your running game. Like you can't force it if it's not working. You need to be able to adjust, and it just seems like the second the ball is put in Michael Penix's hands, so to speak, to help to go win the game, that's when disaster strikes. It's unfortunate, but that's what's happened so far this year. James is in Decatur. James.
Hey, Turtle.
What up, man?
You know, we've been doing this ifing game for the last four games, and the ifing is not working. But what I'm trying to figure out is, what are they doing out there at Flower Branch? Are they scrimmaging? Are they going against – the offense is going against one of the top five defense. And you tell me that they didn't see Michael Penix mechanics doing that? I'm just trying to figure out, what are they doing out there?
Well, James, that's exactly why I'm saying it's coaching, to your point. Exactly, right? What are they doing? Why have they not been able to figure this out? What are they not trying that they need to start trying? That's what these guys get paid millions of dollars to figure out. To James's point, figure it out. You're the coach. You're the head coach, Raheem. You're the OC, Zach. You've certainly found out what doesn't work. So now it's time to figure out what works. Taylor's in Norcross. Taylor, go ahead.
Yo, what's going on, Turtle?
What up, Taylor?
Yo, so my thing is, you're absolutely right. It comes down to coaching, but specifically one coach, and it's Raheem. It falls at Raheem's feet. Raheem's the leader, but more or less, my thought is that Raheem provides zero structure for everyone underneath him. So he's not doing his job as a leader to provide the structure for both Zach and for Dwayne and for all those people that have their hands in the offense to say, hey, guess what? Just like we did in Minnesota, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to come out and make it a point to do this. And if it's not working, then we'll try to tailor it to fit it so that, you know, we don't go away from it. We'll continue to try to do different variations of what the game plan is. You started this segment with saying, you know, hey, if you have one job and your job is to, you know, finish your thing, then that should be your goal. You should circle it. It should be like, okay, no matter what, this is what we are supposed to do. This is the goal. This is what we're trying to accomplish. And you've attacked the situation that way. And for me, I feel like Raheem is great as a rah-rah guy. He's a great people person, but he's not a leader, and he doesn't provide the structure that, say, Mike Vrabel does when he goes to New England. Like, he brings the guy from Las Vegas, who everyone's like, oh, yeah, he's a terrible coach. No, he's not a terrible coach. He just needed someone to provide him a little bit of structure so that, hey, he can succeed with a second-year quarterback. Nobody thought McNay was going to be great like that. But guess what? They're succeeding, and they're succeeding with that structure in that organization. So that's my solution is, hey, you need to, as Raheem Morris, understand what you're trying to do, make it a point to circle it, underline it, whatever you got to do to make sure that everybody's on the same page, give them that structure, and then you should be good to go. At least at that point, you can identify like, okay, hey, maybe we should have tailored this X, Y, Z. You can make adjustments from there. But you know, at this point, it seems like they're just willy-nilly. It's like, okay, yeah, you tell me what you want to do, and that doesn't work.
No, I appreciate
that's all I got. Thanks,
yeah,
Turtle.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Listen, that's exactly what Raheem needs to do, but we don't know the tangible and intangible things that go into that, right? Like, we're not privy to the meeting structure and what goes on in all those rooms and everything. You hope, as the coach, that he's doing those things. If he's not, that certainly needs to change immediately. But again, you've now had a 9-game sample size to figure out what works and what doesn't for your quarterback. Make the dang adjustments, man. Come on, Zach, Raheem, TJ, Dwayne, everybody in that room, Ken, let's go. It's crunch time for the young QB. We got to make it happen. If you're on hold, stay there. Your calls are coming up. Plus, Will McFadden, senior writer for AtlantaFalcons.com. All that and more. Getting rolling with you on a Tuesday evening. Chris Thomas tonight. Back with you here on 92.9 The Game is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. We will take more of your calls. If you're on hold, stay there. You're first up when we get back. If not, grab a line. Garrett Chapman will be screening the calls this evening. Appreciate him filling in for Big O, who will be back tomorrow. Right now, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Will McFadden, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. Will, unfortunately, only one place to start this evening, and that is with QB1. That has been the main and driving force of conversation after the game. He goes 12 for 28. Looks absolutely solemn in the post-game press conference and with our very own Dave Archer. So what did you make of his performance? What went wrong? What did you see that he was not seeing and diagnosing on the field on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally understandable place to start, right? And unfortunately, it's kind of like some of the things that I expected going into the season are playing out, but they're playing out in not like the worst times possible, but just you look at the red zone, for instance, right? For the first 6 weeks or 7 weeks, they were moving the ball really well. And then some of the, I think, inconsistencies, whether that is throwing the football, the communication kind of coming from the sideline up in the box, like getting that relayed into the huddle, then getting out, and all of that stuff. When you're dealing with a young quarterback who's only played 11 games, right? And I know to anybody who wants to make the counter Michael Penix argument, that's going to sound like, okay, you're making all these excuses for him. But bear with me for 1 second, right? He is still a rookie in the NFL. And all of the college reps that he played matter, but this is a new league and a new sport and all of that. So I expected these inconsistencies. I expected some really great moments from Michael Penix. And I expected there to be some moments where you kind of scratch your head and you say, okay, let's see how it looks the next time around. And that has been the story, I think, of this season. A lot of that has to do with some of the defenses they're playing. I think some of that has to do with the offense and getting in tune with the guys around him. And that was why I wanted to pose the question to Raheem Morris yesterday, because specifically I feel like the area that I have locked into on this are when he's facing pressure, which he did a lot against the Colts, right? Is those zero blitzes, those kind of simulated pressures. Normally what I'm used to seeing in those situations is, okay, you identify the pressure, you make the check for the blocking, you keep the back end, what have you, but then you've also got that hot route, right? You've got the quick slant, you've got a flat route, like anything to get the ball out of your hands fast. And I feel like that's the part that I haven't seen yet. So I asked Raheem, you know, are you comfortable with these alerts, the hot checks, all of that? And he seemed to, and this was the theme kind of yesterday, say, yeah, I think Mike has a really good handle on what we're asking him to do there on that part of the offense. We've got to get the guys around him on the same page. So I think it's easy to look at Mike as the kind of like focal point of this because he has the ball in his hands. And he's a rhythm thrower too, Chris. I don't think so many people realize this. He's like fifth or sixth in the percentage of throws on rhythm this season. He's like right behind Matthew Stafford, which, you know, there's a comp for you. But to me, that means that he needs the guys to be in the right spot when they're going to be there. He needs the offensive line to kind of hold up for some of these deep dropbacks, X, Y, and Z. It's like he wants to throw the ball on rhythm. So I think that does put a lot of onus on the other 10 guys around him. And yeah, it didn't look great at times on Sunday, and that's for them to figure out. But I don't think I'm totally surprised by it, and I don't think it means that Michael Penix Jr. is a problem or is not the answer for the Falcons moving forward. It just means he's a young quarterback who's getting used to life in the NFL.
Okay, so with all of that setting the table, how much of everything you just said do you feel falls on Michael Penix Jr. himself? Essentially, how far behind the eight ball do you think he is based on where we thought he could be 9 games into the season, whether that's preparation, whether that's doing what he needs to do to be ready on game day, whether that's film study, or how much of it is on the coaching and not being able to get him up to speed and where he needs to be? Because I think that's really the main debate that's going on right now.
Yeah, I don't even know if he's not like up to speed. It doesn't look like he's over his skis or anything to me. Like he looks like he can run an offense. There are absolutely some plays where, yeah, like some of the intentional groundings, right? Like that's a good example probably, because I think it's fair to say that has been a little bit of an issue with, all right, you're in pressure. You're kind of like trying to avoid a sack, which is great. But then where's that next level of awareness? That stuff doesn't necessarily change overnight. That it takes a lot of time. It takes some reps. It takes experiences in those moments. So when you're looking at kind of the coaching and the player and the preparedness of all of this, there have been a lot of moments where the play has been there, and for whatever reason, either the ball hasn't gone in that direction or it has, and it was a great throw and it was dropped, or maybe the case like with Kyle Pitts and the potential touchdown, it's slightly off, right? And in that situation, you could say, yes, Michael Penix underthrew the ball, but I would venture to say that there are 31 other starting quarterbacks around the NFL who from time to time are going to underthrow a deep ball. That's not going to make me say Michael Penix Jr. can't throw the deep ball. It's going to make me look at, okay, that play, he didn't have it. Could Kyle Pitts have jumped up and maybe made a contested grab the way Drake London might? Yeah, he probably could. So that is where, as a coach, you take that, then you work on those two guys, and then the next time they're in that situation, you hope to see the change. So I've kind of felt like they've had game plans that have presented opportunities for them. If you're looking at the macro, the run versus the pass and how they're producing there, yeah, like you can see trends, right? They're clearly identifiable. I just kind of think it comes back to they're not hitting the key plays in the key moments, and that is going to make you lose some games. And then it's the inconsistency of a young player with, you know, a lack of time with kind of some key guys like Darnell Mooney and whatnot. So I don't think there is a clear answer here, Chris. As tough as that is and as unsatisfying as that is also life in the NFL.
No, you're 100% right, as we're talking with Will McFadden, senior writer and editor of AtlantaFalcons.com. With the defense, it's almost sort of the same thing, the Jekyll and Hyde of it, Will. So unfortunate, the offense can't sustain drives, can't get in rhythm. The defense has to be on the field for so much more time. The time of possession is completely lopsided the last couple of weeks. So you get 7 sacks, which is great, but then you allow Jonathan Taylor to get almost 300 all-purpose yards. It's partly because of the defense's fault, but honestly, it's also part because of the offense and their inability to sustain on third down and stay on the field.
That, absolutely. You hit the nail on that. It was funny. I was in the middle of recording our post-game pod, Falcons Final Whistle, with Torrey McElhinney, and it was kind of like in that moment, I don't know, I was watching the game, obviously, but it was kind of like then I did the box score check. And it like hit me in real time. I was like, oh my God, the Colts had how many yards? Jonathan Taylor had how many yards? Like I know that 83 yard run counted for a lot, but it felt like the box score was not indicative of the vibe that I got from Atlanta's defense early on in that game, which was, man, they're going toe to toe with the league's best offense here. Right. And they are imposing their will in some ways. And the pass rush is getting to Daniel Jones. But like you said, over the course of a game, this is why coaches are so, serious about stressing the three-phase complementary football nature of it, is because the way the offense was unable to sustain longer drives and pick up third downs, yeah, Atlanta's defense was on the field, I think, 70 plays. That's too many, and especially in a game that's going to come down to the wire and go into overtime, the advantage totally swings in the favor of the offense that is going up against the more tired and just like the defense that's been out there on the field all game long. So 100% agree with you there. I think the defense is not an issue. They've been a really good surprise, but they cannot be out there for 70 plays. And I do look back at the offense being unable to sustain some of those drives as a reason.
I got to admit, I thought there was a real chance that the Falcons would have an interim special teams coordinator after what happened in that game and in Berlin versus Indy. Three separate drives started on your side of the 50, which is just inexplicable. This is not the first time that's happened with kick coverage. Marquise Williams, known as a good coach around the league, but it seems like for whatever reason, maybe partially due to the new rules, Will, special teams is really struggling right now.
Yeah, you know, for whatever reason, that has been the case. And you can look at it, it's not just the coverage units, right? Jamal Agnew not getting, I think, the number of returns that, or the level of return that he would want, that Marquise would want. I do believe Marquise is a good special teams coach. Like, looking at what his totality of work here in Atlanta has been, I mean, think back to the Raiders game last year on Monday Night Football. You get two blocked punts. I know one didn't really count as a punt, but like, who cares? You got a hand on the ball. In my book, that's a block. So we have seen the good from a Marquise Williams unit. But yeah, for whatever reason this year, there's the leaky yards on kick and punt returns. There's the lack of kind of your own explosive plays. And then, of course, you know, the field goal kicking and kind of those journeys throughout this season. So it is like, that's a little bit, I think, of the Falcons are right there, and they have not been able to break through or get over that hump in some of these games, because more often than not, I think it's fair to say two of the phases have let them down, whether it be offense and special teams or defense and special teams or offense and defense. Like, you need two of the three, and sometimes you need all three. And more often than not, I think the Falcons have really only had one phase clicking at a time, and that's not going to lead to many wins. So yeah, I don't know what the answer is on special teams, because I don't know enough about special teams, but I agree with you that this has not been what they expected or what I expected at all.
Before I let you go, I know it's radio and I'm subject to hyperbole as nature of my job here on 92.9 The Game, but Will, it is anything but must win, I think, is an unfair characterization for this game on Sunday in order to keep the season alive. I don't see any other way about it. They need to get this one, snap the losing streak, get back on track, and keep their very, very small, but the window is technically still open to get a playoff berth.
Yeah, it feels like that. If for no other reason, prove it to yourself. You know, right? Like, this is a team you know well who gave you still probably your worst loss of this season. Here's a chance for a little bit of revenge to kickstart, hopefully, a second half run. No, they're not going to be mathematically out of it, but you're going to now be 0-3 in the division. The Panthers are going to have a clear lead on you in the wild card race. The NFC looks pretty loaded right now when you look at the playoff picture, the West and the North especially. So it's going to be tough. I think the next three games, that stretch, Chris, like that's going to tell you everything you need to know. But obviously it starts on Sunday.
We'll appreciate the time as always. We'll check you out at AtlantaFalcons.com. We'll talk soon.
Of course. Anytime, Chris.
All right. That is Will McFadden there. When we get back, it's back to you on the phones. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. You just heard Will. This coaching staff has 8 games left to get number 9 back on track. Do you think they can do it? More of your calls coming up next.